begin, I'm going to have to turn around here because I don't have a remote. But let me just begin. I know we've been looking at the 70 weeks of Daniel. It's kind of like wrapping up or kind of coming here to a climax in regard to the eschatology of the Old Testament. And let me reiterate what I've said in this regard. The reason that I've done this, the reason I've started with the Old Testament, I know it's a little bit harder. It's a little bit more complicated because you're dealing with so many passages in the Old Testament, which makes it seem complicated. But the reason I'm doing that is because if you see what the hope of the Jews was before Christ came the first time, if you understand how the Jews understood their eschatology before Christ came, you will understand, you will be able to understand the eschatology of the New Testament. And what most people do with eschatology, and we talk about the last things, they start in the New Testament, and when they go to passages, they work back to the Old Testament. And that's confusing. So I know this is a little bit harder, but hopefully what I'm going to do tonight, and we're just going to go through is whatever we can, and we'll just pick up again next week. And again, kind of what I said this morning, I know that there are some people where this is kind of coming together, and I know there are other people it's harder. And I, you know, it's not a matter of, it's a hard subject. So but I want to encourage you, if you have questions, ask. And truly, I want you to understand. So if you have questions, please ask me, and let me know if this helps. A little feedback is good, so. What I want to do, and some of this again has been reviewed, and the reason I'm doing this is because in some respects I guess I've been asked from the standpoint of to make it a little simpler. So I thought doing a PowerPoint might actually help, because the beauty of a PowerPoint is you can kind of bring up things one thing at a time, and it kind of helps you explain it a little easier. So what I want to begin to do tonight is talk about, we've been looking at the 70 weeks of Daniel, and you remember that Daniel was given this vision, said he's going to, that Gabriel told Daniel that there will be 70 weeks determined upon his people and his city, in other words, Jerusalem and Israel. That 70 weeks is 70 sevens, or 70 times 7 years, 490 years. But what I want to do tonight mainly, and we'll see how far we get, but what I want to do mainly is again go to the background. Because what I want you to understand is the significance of the 70 weeks in relation to the kingdom of the Messiah. The kingdom that the Old Testament was looking for. And that's what I want to make clear if I can tonight. And again, if you have questions, it's going to be a little hard because of the way I'm standing here, but... Well, I don't know. I guess I could, but there's no real easy place for me to stand anyway. I'm either right in front of it, or it's just as good, I guess. Ideally, I should be over there with a long cord, but it's all right. That's for the future. The kingdom concept of the Old Testament, again, this doesn't need to be confusing. When you look at the whole Old Testament, from Genesis to Malachi, without exception, we could look at every single book of the Old Testament. Every single book is pointing to the kingdom. Okay? It's pointing to a future kingdom. So you could talk about the covenants, which we've talked about. This is why I developed the Old Testament. Talk about all the promises of God in the Old Testament. Talk about the history and the prophecies. They are all pointing to a future kingdom. Now, one of the reasons I think eschatology is difficult is because the Old Testament truly has not been taught very well in our churches. And what I mean by that is Old Testament, generally, the way it's taught in our churches is this. We teach, and we should do this, but we teach our children, or we teach the Old Testament in terms of merely stories. We know about Jonah, we know about Joseph, we know about the flood, we know about Adam and Eve. We know about all these stories, but we don't know how they work. We don't teach a theology of the Old Testament. And it's not that it's that complex, it's just we don't teach it. So that very few people have any sense of time or of development in the Old Testament. But you understand, every single thing in the Old Testament is pointing to a king, is pointing to the future kingdom. All the prophecies, all the stories, it's not merely pictures of saints. You know, it's not merely Joseph being moral and refusing to. It has to do with the kingdom. Everything is pointing to the kingdom in some way, shape, or form. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to explain the kingdom. To the Jews at this time. And he said, it's not for you to know the times.
But that would imply to me that that's a physical kingdom that was in the past where the Jews had kings, etc.
Yeah.
Is that the kingdom you're talking about?
Well, the kingdom, what I'm talking about is the fact that the Old Testament is continually pointing to a future kingdom, and the main character is the Messiah. So that almost every time it's pointing to the kingdom, it's pointing to the Messiah. And every time it's pointing to the Messiah, it's pointing to the kingdom. The Messiah is the king. They were looking for, every Jew was looking for the Messiah. In other words, he was looking for the kingdom. They were one and the same to the Jew. The Messiah was going to be the king. Now again, this is the picture. I'm not going to go too many verses here because these are the verses we looked at for about 9 months. This is why I developed it. Okay, there was the pointing to a king. The location of this kingdom was clearly the earth. I mean, it was that's pretty clear from the prophecy. The capital of this kingdom is Jerusalem. The people are Jews and Gentiles. And the time of this kingdom was future. It's always future in the Old Testament. Everywhere you look, it's always future. They're always looking for this. This was their hope. The duration of this kingdom was forever. These things are repeated again and again and again as we looked at the last few months. The description of this kingdom, it's the reversal of the curse. As I pointed out this morning, you know, when we were talking about Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve sinned, right away, right after the curse, he gave Adam his curse, he gave Eve his curse, or her curse, and then he cursed the serpent. And then, immediately, he gave a promise. That promise was that the seed of the woman would someday crush the head of the serpent. That was a promise of the reversal of the curse, the reversal of what Satan had accomplished in bringing sin into the human race. And this was, in essence, what the kingdom is the development of this throughout the Old Testament. It's all based on this reversal of the curse. It was going to be reversed. And it was going to be reversed on the earth. And that kingdom is characterized throughout the Old Testament as a kingdom where there is peace, universal peace, and universal righteousness on the earth. Now, everything in the Old Testament is pointing to that kingdom. Does that make sense?
Wasn't that reversal of the curse accomplished at Calvary?
The accomplishment of it, yes, but it still has not been reversed on earth. But we still live under the curse. We still die. And you understand, and this is what makes it complicated in the Bible. The Jew, when he looked ahead to the kingdom, he looked ahead to this kingdom. He did not see the cross and then the church age and then the second coming of Christ and then a millennium and then heaven. He couldn't see any of that. He saw it all as one. Messiah, kingdom, future. That's what they were looking for. There was this age and there was the age of the Messiah. That's all they saw. Now we, in the New Testament, we see it expanded so that we have the church, in a sense, is a part of the kingdom. Okay, we're members of the kingdom, but we're not the fulfillment of this, as we'll see tonight. But it is an aspect of the kingdom. Then the millennium is another aspect of the kingdom, which is what they were more looking toward. And then, to be honest with you, the final fulfillment of the kingdom is heaven. That's when the curse will be completely reversed. That's when it will be completely, everything will be reconciled to God perfectly. Death is not defeated until the end of the millennium, which you see in Revelation. Now, that's the kingdom, but understand, to the Jew, they didn't see all these divisions. They just saw kingdom, Messiah. That's all they saw. But it's all developed in the Old Testament, very much in detail. Now, I give this verse, Daniel 7, 13 and 14. What I want to point out is this is what they understood. This is what they were looking for. This is the kingdom. This is Daniel. I believe this is referring to Christ's second coming. It says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. The Son of Man is Christ. Of course, again, the Jews didn't know. I mean, the Jews would have known him as the Messiah, but they didn't know who he was. He came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days. Who's the Ancient of Days? The Father. Okay. And they brought him near before him. That is, they brought the Son of Man near before him. And there was given him dominion. That's kingdom talk. That's the kingdom. It's given him dominion, glory, and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, there's the eternity, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Now that's what they were looking for, that kingdom. Okay? Notice it includes Jews, it includes Gentiles. All nations, peoples. That's not a new thing in the New Testament. Remember, and it was in the Abrahamic covenant. He said, all the families of the earth will be blessed because of you. It goes all the way back there. In other words, this was God's plan of the ages to bring about this kingdom. He was using the Jewish people to bring about this worldwide, universal kingdom. That's what they were looking for. Now, briefly, again, we looked at this. The covenants of the Old Testament all relate to this kingdom. The Abrahamic covenant was a promise made to Abraham, and it was a promise of a people that would come forth from Abraham and a land that those people would occupy. Now that was related to the kingdom, because every kingdom has a people and every kingdom has a land. The Davidic covenant, which was made centuries later with David, was a promise that a king would come from David. It wasn't the first promise of a king in the Old Testament. There are lots of promises in Genesis 49, in Numbers, when Balaam prophesies. There were prophecies that a king would come, that there would be one who would come out of Jacob and rule. But the promise to David was that it would be David's son. This king, the one they were looking for, was going to be David's son. That was related to the kingdom. Okay? The new covenant was a promise primarily of forgiveness of sins. It was a promise that their sin would be removed and that they would then be in the kingdom. Although all of those things point to the kingdom, and all three covenants, those three major covenants, are all fulfilled in the kingdom. Now, yeah. You could. It's not really part of the salvation. It's not really part of the kingdom. It was part of the... But you're right. I mean, that's where it would start. I mean, the Adamic, what is referred to as the Adamic covenant was basically when God said to Adam, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so, although it's not called a covenant, the implication was there that if he obeyed, he would live. And obviously the command, the warning was if he didn't, he would die. And that is generally referred to as the Adamic covenant. And he broke that, obviously. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm going after that, to the curse and the promise.
The reversal of the curse.
Right.
Okay. That's technically not the Adamic covenant, but that is certainly the beginning point, yes. That promise is the start of the king, of the whole idea of the kingdom. In fact, I wish you had time to look at these prophecies. Because if you go to Numbers, remember there's prophecies that Balaam gave. Do you remember that when Balaam, the one who the donkey talked to, and he tried to curse Israel and he couldn't, God wouldn't let him? He gave these wonderful prophecies. They're all about the kingdom. They're profound.
So if I were to, just from my own thoughts, to summarize that, you had a slide up there a little while ago. They had the elements of the kingdom with a king, a people, a land, a capital, a type of, all were righteous, all were, all of those things, peace, that's what's being revealed here across the board, kind of in the people, the land, the king, a forgiveness of sin.
Yes.
It's being developed throughout those covenants.
It is something that was seen. All of these things were seen as things that would take place when the kingdom would come. No, they were looking for this kingdom. They were expecting that this kingdom would come. And I'll explain this, because Daniel gives the time. They were always looking for the coming of the Messiah. It could not come without the Messiah. They knew that. They knew that the Messiah was the king who was going to bring in this kingdom.
In Acts 1:4, it says, restore the kingdom to the Jews.
Yes. So there was a sense in which they had the beginning of the kingdom. But they were looking for the Messiah. The key was the Messiah.
They had it shadowed, I suppose. I mean, David sitting up
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it.
And they had it shadowed in type, but they certainly didn't have the final thing.
But without a question, and that's a good point, Gary, without a question, the Messianic kingdom was seen as what you might say a restoration or a completion of what was in the Old Testament, in a sense. But the kingdom for the Jew was the age of the Messiah. They were looking for the Messiah, and that Messiah would bring the kingdom, which would bring the end of, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Any other questions about what I've said?
I was just thinking to add to that. It was kind of God's intention for Israel to be His people in His land and to be His representative.
Yes.
But with sin and the curse, could
yes.
never be, they kept on falling.
They failed. You're right. And they were meant to, you're right. They were meant to be a light to the Gentiles. And they failed. they became corrupted by the world around them. And to be honest, I mean I've kind of skipped over what we talked about in regard to the Old Covenant, because the Old Covenant is important in relation to understanding the New Covenant, but I don't want to get into that tonight. I just wanted to point out that all these things are pointing toward the kingdom. Everything is pointing toward the kingdom. Any other questions? Now, this is important to understand, especially in light of Daniel. Okay? Context. In the whole Old Testament, everything before the Messiah, okay, is what I'm going to call, it's not called the scripture, pre-kingdom. It's the pre-kingdom situation. The pre-kingdom situation is summed up like this. Gentile rule over the earth. That's the pre-kingdom situation. That's what we're in today, by the way.
Are you describing this because of the circumstances we live in or because of biblical reference to that?
No, this is called in several places the time of the Gentiles. In fact, Jesus said, until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled in Luke. Okay, so no, it is, and this is what Daniel's about, the time of the Gentiles, which is what I'm trying to point out here. It's pre-kingdom. It continues today, and it's described, this is not necessarily coming from a particular verse, but the time of the Gentiles is described as one that is described of wars, idolatry, evil, injustice, vanity, rebellion against God, poverty. All those things, you could go on and on. Does that sound like today? Okay, we're still in the time of the Gentiles. We're still in the time of the Gentiles, which is what Jesus was pointing to when he said, until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. We're still in this time. We're still pre-kingdom. This is what Psalm 2 is speaking of when it says, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed. The anointed is the Messiah. Saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. In other words, the whole situation of the world is described as the rulers of the world in opposition to the kingdom of the Messiah. And that's who's ruling. That's who rules today. All the world systems are opposed to the kingdom of God. All of them. And the ones, and they're ruling today. This is the pre-kingdom situation. They are foaming at the mouth in opposition to Christ. And this is still the situation we're in. But notice, it's the kings of the earth. Okay, the kings of the earth. We're in the time of the Gentiles. Now, the Old Testament is clear about the transition. In other words, you have You have the Gentile rule over the earth, which is what we're at now and have been from the beginning, since Adam fell, basically. You have on the other side, you have the kingdom of the Messiah, when this kingdom ushers in. And you have very clearly in the Old Testament a statement about, well, that's what the transition looks like. Not so much in regard to a time frame, but in terms of what it looks like. And this is what is described over and over again in the Old Testament, the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord was seen as that time that would transition from this time of the Gentiles ruling to the time when the kingdom would be ushered in. Now, I'm going to argue that it starts with the tribulation, what we'll get to later. But that day of the Lord is when the wrath of God is poured out on the earth, when these Gentile kingdoms are completely destroyed. Done. Completed. It's when Christ takes the kingdoms of this world and smashes them, just like the image. Israel is purified. And again, this is Old Testament terminology. Israel's sins are removed at the day of the Lord. Israel's regathered to the land in the day of the Lord. All of those things happen either right before or right at the beginning of the kingdom. So the Jews understood the day of the Lord as that transitional point. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I keep going back to that slide you had early on that said, here's the characteristics of the kingdom. And in order for the kingdom to have those characteristics, those things have to occur.
Yes.
In order to have a righteous kingdom, you have to be purified, and sins must be removed. In order to have a peaceful kingdom, your enemies must be destroyed.
Correct. And understand, again, Jews did not see the cross before this. We understand now. The way their sins are going to be removed is the same way our sins are removed. They're going to look on Christ. They're going to see him whom they pierced, and they're going to weep, and they're going to repent. They're going to receive Christ the same way we did. But they couldn't see that in the Old Testament. I mean, they looked forward. All they saw was the fact that their sins were going to be removed at this time. As a nation, God said he's going to remove their sins. Now, again, I'm not referring to a lot of scripture here because we've looked at these scriptures in the past. But here's an example of the day of the Lord scripture, just to give you, again, an understanding. There are a lot of passages like this in the Old Testament that speak of the wrath, the day of wrath. It says, behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease. That's a summation of the day of the Lord. By the way, that's what Revelation 6 starts with. Revelation 6 says, the day of God's wrath has come. That's the day of the Lord. So that's the day of the Lord, that day of wrath, is what would take place at the end of the time of the Gentiles. So what I want you to understand from the standpoint of Daniel as a book, okay, not just the 70 weeks, but the book is all about that transition when the time of the Gentiles would be ended and the kingdom would be ushered in. That point where that happens, that's what the whole book is about. The whole book is about the time of the Gentiles, and most specifically, the end of the time of the Gentiles. So it anticipates the kingdom of the Messiah. So you see this throughout the book where you have this cataclysmic event where you go from the nations ruling to Christ ruling, the Messiah ruling. That's what the whole book is about. And what Daniel does, and all of this from Daniel's perspective, is future. He's at the time when he gets his visions, at least the first one, he's in Babylon. And he's under the first king, Nebuchadnezzar. But he gives, in those two visions, in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, we are told of four kingdoms. Four kingdoms that would rule the world. This is the time of the Gentiles. From Daniel's perspective, they were future. From our perspective, they're past. But the image, with the gold head, and four beasts that came out of the sea, all are speaking of these four kingdoms. Now, from our perspective, they're past. But he also gives a statement of what it's like right at the end of this time of the Gentiles, just before the kingdom of Messiah comes in. And that, to us, is still future. And he speaks of 10 kings. They're the 10 toes on the image. They're the 10 horns on the beast. And I'll look at these in a minute. But just to give you the overview here. And out of those 10 rulers, they're called kings, but I mean they're just rulers. Just think of rulers, okay? They're 10 rulers. Out of those 10 rulers comes one. And he rules the world. And it's that ruler that is destroyed when the kingdom of Messiah comes in. Now I'm going to explain this in a minute, a little more detailed. That situation is the day of the Lord. In other words, that's what's going to happen in the day of the Lord. Those 10 kings are going to rule, and out of those 10 kings is going to come one world ruler in that time period, the day of the Lord, the tribulation. And that is what's destroyed at the second coming of Christ. I'm going to show that in a minute. But presently, we're just in a continual state of Gentile domination. I mean, we're just a continuation here of what was in the past. Any questions?
Let me just clarify myself. The day of the Lord, then, is not an event as much as it is a time period. Not just
it's a time period. Technically, in the Bible, I mean, I would say it starts with the day of the Lord. Technically, in the Bible, the kingdom is included in the day of the Lord. But it starts with the day of wrath.
But it's a long, in other words, it's both an event and a continuing
yes.
time period.
Yeah.
And
it's basically seen as that time that ushers in the kingdom. And it includes the kingdom. Okay. But it starts with wrath.
But not just a 24-hour day.
No.
Not just an event.
No.
It's a time period.
Yeah.
It could be 1,000 years, though, right?
What's that?
The day of the Lord could be 1,000 years.
Yeah. Okay, the end of the time of the Gentiles in Daniel. Let me just expand on what I've just given in terms of that chart. There's the fourth kingdom, which is emphasized and described actually more than God's kingdom in Daniel, which is, tells you the book is mainly about the kingdoms of the nations. The fourth kingdom is Rome. I mean, there's no one questions that. It's the legs of iron on the image. It's the beast with 10 horns. It's Rome. Now, out of the fourth kingdom comes 10 kings. It's just 10 rulers. 10 rulers that are some in some way, shape, or form an extension of Rome. And all it means is this, that it's kings who rule over the area that once Rome ruled over. So I think it could include rulers from Europe, Africa, and Asia, because Rome was in all three of those places. But it's going to be whatever is at the end of the age. These 10 rulers, don't think necessarily literally kings; it could be presidents. Okay, but it's 10 rulers that are over the area, at least in part of what Rome was. Those 10 kings are come out of Rome. Now, here it says in Daniel 2:42, this is regarding the image. It says, "And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay," and then he goes on, I didn't put it in the whole verse here, it says, "And in the days of these kings," in other words, in the days of the toes, 10 toes, 10 kings, "in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed." In other words, it's the end of the time of the Gentiles. Does that make sense? 7:24, the image of the four beasts. "And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise." So there's a fourth kingdom, there's 10 kings, and then finally, there's a world ruler that comes out of these 10 kings. So these 10 rulers that are ruling somewhere in what was formerly the Roman Empire, out of them comes one who rules the world. And we're going to look at him for just a few minutes here. This is Daniel 7:24 and 25. speaking of the one that would come out of the ten, it says, "And another shall rise after them," and this describes him. "He shall speak great words against the Most High." In other words, he will speak against God. "Shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until time and times and the dividing of times." Now let me break this down. This is what we're talking about, by the way, when we speak of the Antichrist. He's not called the Antichrist in the Old Testament, but this is what we're talking about. This one ruler, this king who would come from the ten. Yeah.
Is he that's the little horn?
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's the little horn that comes out of the ten horns. That little horn is what we call the Antichrist. So if we talk about the little horn, you're talking about the Antichrist. But he's depicted in this way, okay? We see him more clearly in the New Testament, but there are several things that you see here that connect him clearly with the New Testament.
Is this a man or is this
Satan? It's a man.
Not Satan.
No, it's a man. It's a ruler. It's a king. He will speak blasphemous words against God. The words are, "And he shall speak great words against the Most High." Secondly, he will persecute God's people. Jews and Gentiles, by the way, when you see the book of Revelation, but especially the Jews. He's going to especially persecute the Jews. "He shall wear out the saints of the Most High. He shall usher in a new age." I use the word new age on purpose because I think that's what the new age movement is. It's moving towards his system. The new age, he's going to think to change times and laws. And I think the point is he's going to bring in a whole new paradigm. A whole new paradigm of society. And that is what the New Age is, even though it's quite old. I mean, the New Age is a moving toward this. He will usher in a new age over the whole earth, and he shall rule the world for 3.5 years. They shall be given into his hand for a time and times and the dividing of time. Everyone agrees that that's referring to 3.5 years. That describes the world ruler. This world ruler that came out of the ten kings, this is important. That world ruler is the one whom Christ destroys at his second coming. Now that's important for this reason. And I'm going to show you this from the New Testament. That's important for this reason. It proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that the kingdom hasn't come. You understand what I mean? The kingdom that they were looking for in the Old Testament has not come yet because the time of the Gentiles isn't done yet. Because this world ruler hasn't even come yet. And we can show this clearly from the New Testament, but I want you to understand the importance of the relevance of this. The kingdom has not come because the world ruler that Daniel said would be destroyed when the kingdom comes hasn't come yet. Does that make sense? When we talk about eschatology in the New Testament, that's fundamental. That's why I believe in a futuristic book of Revelations. A lot of people talk about the book of Revelation being past. It's not past. And the reason we know it's not past is because this ruler is not destroyed until Christ comes. This is in Revelation. Okay? This is written at least 40 years after Christ's first coming. The ten horns which you saw are ten kings. Sound familiar? That's clearly Daniel. Which have received no kingdoms as yet. So in other words, they were not kings at the time of the writing of the book of Revelation. But receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. That's that world ruler. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. This beast, who rules with these ten kings, is the one who wars against the Lamb, and in the end is destroyed when the Lord is made king. Now look at Revelation 19:19. This is the passage where Christ comes down in a white horse. I saw the beast. Who's the beast? The beast is the one who came out of the ten kings. And the kings of the earth, that's the ten kings, and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. That, we call that Armageddon. That's the day when Christ returns. He destroys that world ruler. That's when the kingdom is ushered in. Yeah.
In Revelation 17:11,
mm-hmm.
It's talking about the beast. It says the beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. And it goes on to say how he came after the seventh and seventh time. How does that work? He comes before the last two.
I have to look at that. Wait, what is it? Verse 11? What's a little confusing in the book of Revelation is the beast is sometimes Satan, the beast is sometimes all the kingdoms, and sometimes it's the Antichrist, and it's a little confusing. But so here's the mind, verse 9, which was wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits, and they are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must remain a little while. And it says, the beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth and is one of the seven, and he goes to destruction. I'm not sure why it says was and is not. That's a good question. You're right. You're probably right. That goes back to Revelation 13, where it would suggest that he was healed of a deadly wound. But that's a very good question. Any other questions? How soon?
Could the UN be sort of one of those things?
Well, I'll just say this. In a general way, the UN is clearly a movement towards the globalizing that's going to result in this new age. There's no question about that. I mean, we're moving toward a global society, and that is certainly part of what the new age is. I need to get to a stopping point here. Now, let me give you another verse that's referring to the same world ruler. This is 2 Thessalonians 2. I'm just giving you verses 4 and 8. It's describing the man of sin, he's called in 2 Thessalonians, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God. Now that goes back to remember the little horn was the one who said blasphemous words against God. So this is it. He exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God. Now that's significant because, and this is going to get significant when we look at the 70 weeks, that implies what? There's a temple. In other words, and I think you see this in the 70 weeks. We'll look at this next week, hopefully. In other words, there is going to be a temple rebuilt in Jerusalem.
Is that Ezekiel?
No. Well, no, I don't think so. But it could be. That's a good question. We'll have to talk about that. So that this guy sets himself up in the temple of God. By the way, this in Daniel is called the abomination of desolation. That's what the Antichrist does. He desecrates the temple. Showing himself that he is God. And then shall that wicked, the wicked one being the Antichrist, be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Of his coming. So this man is destroyed at his coming. This is the little horn. This is the little horn that comes out of the ten rulers. This is the world ruler that's still future. The kingdom doesn't come until this man's destroyed. In the Old Testament, that's how it's pictured. Four events, and this is where I'll close tonight. Four events that coincide. This is, I think, important. And this is what I'm trying to show. This is why I did this. The destruction of this world ruler, the ushering in of the kingdom, and the return of Christ. Those three things coincide. That's when you put the book of Revelation with the book of Daniel, these three things come together. But what I want to show you, and what I think is especially significant in relation to what we're looking at, is this. It also coincides with the conclusion of the 70 weeks of Daniel. That's where the prophecy ends. The conclusion of the prophecy of the 70 weeks is that moment. It's the end of the time of the Gentiles. Now that's important because of the nature of the 70th week and because of the gap between the 69th and 70th. But I'll explain that next week. Any questions? Does that make sense? Yes. Yes. And when you understand that the book of Revelation is describing the time just before this and this time, in other words, the time that's coincident with Daniel, that opens up the whole eschatology in the New Testament. It brings it together. It makes sense. It comes together. That's why I say the 70 weeks of Daniel and Daniel is so critical in understanding New Testament eschatology. Let me just finish with this. This is basically what Daniel's doing. There's the time of the Gentiles, and there's the kingdom. The second coming of Christ is when this transition takes place, and it's also coincidental with the 70 weeks of Daniel. Okay, that's the bottom line. I mean, that's this, now we'll look at the 70 weeks next time, but that's kind of where we're headed, and hopefully again we can make this clear because. It is important to understand the New Testament. And as I said this morning, it is difficult. I don't apologize for the fact that it's difficult, but I do want to make it understandable. Any other questions before we... Yes, Dean.
When does the rapture happen?
Well, that's a New Testament thing,
yeah.
And we'll get to that. But I believe the rapture happens just before the 70th week of Daniel starts. In other words, before the tribulation. I think there are good reasons to believe that, but I'm not going to deal with that now. How do I turn this? I don't use PowerPoint too often.